This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomanosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. The Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highway 90 and 98 and in Malbus on 181. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Hello once again, Miss Laurie. I think it's great weather today, isn't
it? Absolutely beautiful.
But if that makes you happy, that's wonderful. But what ain't making me happy is the political storm that we still are seeing out of Washington. And I think, you know, those of you who watched the press conference last week, I think you got a dose of what's coming for sure. I mean, we've seen it. We understand it. But, you know, when you hear it from Biden, it just gets to you. So I want to talk a little bit about that today. And I also want to talk a little bit about the really great rally that we had on Saturday. And Mo Brooks, who was our keynote speaker, gave a really wonderful talk, in my view. But I wanted to talk a little bit about this because it's important for us to understand, you know, what he's saying and some of the issues that he framed. And I think it's important to do that. And I've asked Pete Rehm to come on the show about 10:15 so that we can go over all of that. So
okay.
I think let me just get into a local issue first before I get into my, you know, going back over the press conference with Biden and some of the issues that come out of here. Last Monday, after the radio show, I ended up going down to the press conference that they had with the Eastern Shore MPO and the Mobile MPO, and they were talking about the new bridge thing. So I guess everyone has pretty much got that under control as far as they know what's sort of happening. Okay,
the Truckers Toll Bridge.
Yes, the Truckers Toll Bridge. So we'll see how this works out. Well, we're going to find some more information out about it because Kevin Sprague and I were invited to a meeting this Wednesday with ALDOT Director Cooper. Yes, Lori's looking very, wow.
I'm impressed.
Yes, well, okay. So I guess if you rabble-rouse enough, they're going to pay attention to you. I'm surprised they didn't ask Jim Ziegler to be there because he's the chief rabble-rouser.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Right. Well, so at any rate, I'll have more to say about this next week. So I'm going to hold my fire on what went on with that. And I think, but it is important that they at least recognize that process, and I asked this question and I actually got it on TV, that the process has to be better this time around. They can't just say my way or the highway, take the $6 toll, you know, no toll, no bridge. I mean, that's where they were, and I don't want to get hooked into this right now, but I do
next
think
week
it's a next week issue, so we'll see how all that goes. All right, so I mean, if you watch this press conference, I mean, some of the takeaways I have, and I mean, everyone is going to have their own interpretation about what's the worst thing out there, okay? One of the things that he said that I just jumped out of my seat at, okay, was we have to show democracy works, okay? Hey, folks, we have shown democracy works for a long, long time. Now, what we haven't shown is what the radical left, supposedly social Democrats, want us to do, which is to just turn this country into another version of the wonderful utopias that do not work in the socialist model. So my suggestion to Biden is, first of all, quit having your people, you know, knock this country down so that the Chinese are now using the American left's propaganda about delegitimating American democracy. I mean, and you know, here again we get back to this question that I've stressed to you all before, have built an answer to, you know, the whole question that we have about, you know, racial inclusion. You know, did the civil rights movement mean anything positive? It was all just a lot of hooey. That's what they're saying now. White supremacy is really the issue. And, you know, we get back to this issue of, you know, the new race theory that basically says there can be no way for people to get along. And I've given you enough arguments against that position. I'm not going to repeat all of it now. But, I mean, just think for a second. go and just watch how people interact in the food stores. I mean, does it look like there's tension? We talk to each other, black, white, whatever. Say hi. Is this all just a facade that it means nothing, that we can, you know, shop together, get along together in a public area? I don't know. I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that I would argue makes no sense when you see, as I've suggested to you before, the number of interracial marriages, the political revolution that took place after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Political and social revolutions, it means something. But why don't we have people standing up and saying this? I mean, hell, I don't know how many people are listening to this radio station, but I guarantee you, we need some national leaders fighting back on this. Don't accept the premise of the left's argument. It's BS. But somebody needs to be saying it. Let me point this little tidbit out. This whole business about the border wall is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, Jen Psaki was on Chris Wallace's show, and Wallace is not my favorite guy, but I mean, at least he pushed her on some of these things. But in many respects, it just doesn't matter. They're sticking to their story. Trump, everything Trump did there was wrong. This idea that there was no difference in terms of what Biden says, oh, it's just every year this happens. It's not true. It doesn't happen every year. And Psaki, despite her saying that, well, there was a 31% increase at the border under Trump before he left. Well, no kidding, because Biden announced basically in his October debate, hey, the border is going to be open. I want to do everything I can to, give amnesty to people and all the rest of this stuff. Yeah. And then he goes on to say other things which indicated an open border. So people are going to come. That's not Trump's fault. Okay? What happened to the wall? He's stopped that. You know, what happened to keeping, asylum seekers in Mexico? He stopped that. And again, here's the argument. You know, as Lindsey Graham said, the Border Patrol people warned the Biden administration coming in. If you take away the asylum, keeping them in asylum, you are going to be overwhelmed. And they are overwhelmed. So think about that border business, and you just have to wonder about this. The other thing that I really got absolutely crazy about, I mean, I suppose I got absolutely crazy about all of his stuff, but this one especially, this whole business of voter suppression as part and parcel of what Georgia's trying to do. What Georgia was trying to do was to fix the problems with the election in 2020 in Georgia that started because Stacey Abrams and a judge in Georgia went ahead and destroyed the Georgia election system by imposing mail-in ballots. So Georgia's trying to fix some of those things, okay? So we're not going to worry about signature verifications because that's such a big issue. Okay, fine. Everyone gets a number, okay? But that doesn't mean anything to these people, you know? The idea that you have to have, a ballot, no-excuse ballot, on demand, and not have to worry about voter identification, which is what H.R. 1 says, that's ridiculous. But, of course, Chris Wallace pointed out to Graham, well, you know what? They're not even allowing people to have water and food while they're waiting in line in the hot sun. Let me say this. You cannot do anything 30 feet away from the voting booth here, okay? That's our law. No electioneering. So let me tell you something. I'm bringing water and food to folks. You don't think that's not going to be electioneering? Give me a break. They'll use any way they can to get by with it. So my sense here, though, is that in the end, we have got to figure out a way to make sure that the unconstitutional approaches that were taken in 2020 are fixed. Now, in our case, Alabama didn't have that problem. We had a good electoral system, in part, as I've suggested to you before, because John Merrill and our Attorney General Marshall went after and defended our election system that stood the test in the Supreme Court. No discrimination about what we do. Election integrity is the issue. And the gold standard has to be, you have to be a citizen to vote and you have to be able to prove it. And therein lies the issue. So, as I said, one of the things that drove me crazy too was this whole business of what they're doing with China and Iran. The long and the short of this is that the Chinese problem is real and we have got to be able to address it. And I don't think that, you know, the real critical question will be what is Biden going to do about Taiwan? If we're not going to be willing to defend Taiwan with sending them as much military equipment as they need to defend themselves from either amphibious attack or from some airborne droppings, you know, parachutists coming in, then shame on us. The other thing that we have to do is make sure that the Iranians are contained. And that is going to be very difficult because what's happening is very simple. You know, Biden has withdrawn support from the forces opposed to the Houthis in Yemen. Now you say, well, who cares about Yemen? My goodness gracious, we've got our own problems. Yes, we do. But let me suggest to you, the Houthis are part and parcel and owned by the Iranians. Now put your thinking caps on for a second. The Iranians want dominance. Hegemony is the $25 political science word in the Middle East. Trump stopped them from gaining hegemony. How? Well, the first thing he did was he killed Soleimani, who was the chief architect of their grand plan, okay? The architect of getting Lebanon under control by Hezbollah, the architect of helping Hamas do what Hamas does, the architect of keeping Assad in Syria in power. I mean, think about it. But here's a bigger problem with this whole business of Yemen. It's right on the border of one of our better Middle East allies, Saudi Arabia. Okay, are you thinking with me now? Now think about this. What happens if the Houthis are able to control Yemen and they've already launched attacks from that part of Yemen that's controlled by the Houthis into Saudi Arabia? You've seen last year, 5% of the Saudi oil production was destroyed because of drone attacks that came out of the Houthi-controlled areas. Now, whether the Houthis did it or the Iranians did it, it doesn't really make any difference. It's all one big family there. And the result was very, very bad, number one, in terms of the destruction. But the worst result is the fact that these guys have the capability to do this stuff. Okay? So we're not playing around here. Saudi Arabia is a critical ally in the fight against the Iranian terrorists, as well as, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda to a certain degree. So think about this too. Not only is Yemen important for the reasons I've already given, it also borders the Red Sea, the entrance to the Red Sea. That suddenly, as you've all seen the problems in the Suez Canal, okay? Well, think about this. What happens if the Iranian-based Houthis come to power in Yemen? Okay. And they can certainly block anything that they want and create major problems. It's just like the Iranians in the Strait of Hormuz. The geographic issues here are important, okay? So as we understand what Biden was saying, it's certainly one of those things where it's pretty clear. These guys do not have our strategic interests at heart for a whole variety of reasons. I take it back to Obama, and the very first thing he did was come out of the box and say, you know, America is to blame for most of the world's problems. It's the Great Apology Tour, which I've talked about. So there's my take on that press conference. And it's disgusting, and it's a problem. And we have got to resist the kinds of stuff that's going on. And one of the ways that we can resist is to elect people like Mo Brooks. And as I said to you earlier, I'd like to be able to talk to my friend Pete Rehm, who is a local commentator with the Common Sense radio program. He's got a column with the, one of the news, the Call News, I think, okay? And Pete is on the line. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Dr. Lou. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing good until I get behind this radio and I start talking about all this crap that goes on with Biden and all the rest of these people. But and you have the same problem on Thursday night, so here we are. You know?
Yeah, that's why we do it at night, so that we can imbibe and be more funny when we do it.
Well, right. I have the rest of the day to stew over all this stuff. All right, so
right.
Pete, I really appreciate you coming on. I think that, you know, we really had I thought it was a successful. I wanted to see more people there, but the count I got was 113 people, so that wasn't too bad. To hear Mo Brooks, and what I'd like to be able to do is to give people an opportunity to hear something about what happened with Mo Brooks while he was there. And again, we are going to post on commonsensecampaign.org website a video tape that our friend Judd Blakely has done. Judd's still working on it, but once we get it out there, keep checking the Common Sense Campaign for the video, okay? So, but before then, I'd like to just spend some time with Pete trying to talk about some of the key things about what Mo said, because I think it is important for us to have, you know, an understanding of where he's now a Senate candidate, and I would argue he is the leading Senate candidate. And even though we don't know a lot about some of these other people here who are running already, Miss Blanchard and a Mrs. Taylor, and whoever else is going to run, the fact is that in my view, Mo Brooks stands out from the crowd already, and I doubt seriously if anyone is going to, you know, challenge him in, along the lines of a conservative, you know, opponent. So, Pete, let me just ask you this. As you listen to what was there, and again, I really want to thank Pete for doing the introduction to Congressman Brooks on Saturday. It was really a great introduction. So let me just ask you this, though. What was your key takeaway from what you heard from Mo Brooks on Saturday?
My key takeaway is he ain't backing down. He's not backing down. Where, you know, the propaganda out there, the Democrat media complex is trying to make it where there was no election fraud, that the stolen election is a conspiracy, and that, hey, you know, it's becoming accepted in polite circles that you don't talk about a stolen election because it's silly. And he didn't back down of any of it. He actually went back and recounted a lot of the recent developments, and he stood his ground on and reasserted what he had said on January 6th. He was one of the ones leading the charge in the House against the Electoral College certifications of fraudulent votes. And he explained how that all got derailed.
Right.
And but he didn't back down. He didn't like, okay, he actually talked about it, which, you know, a lot of people are kind of going, okay, I believe it, but I'm not going to talk about it anymore because people think I'm a conspiracy nut when I don't. But he talked about it. He put it out in front. That's my biggest takeaway, is he's not backing down to the establishment media.
Well, I mean, I agree with that completely. I think, you know, one of the takeaways that I got out of it, though, was is that I really thought he has a firm grasp on these issues. And the fact that he's able to articulate them in a forceful delivery that is based on facts, I think that's one of the strong points he has, that, you know, and when you combine it with the fact that, like you said, he's not backing down on these things, I think that he certainly has the ability to really, I think, become a powerful voice for the issues that we think are critical going to the Senate. Let me ask you this. Given what he was talking about, and I think that you probably hit on what you believe was, you know, the best part of his speech, with his defense of the of what happened in with the
stealing the election. He said a lot of good things, and you'll note that I don't think he had any notes. He spoke extemporaneously for about 45 minutes, and you, the Biden can't do that for 45 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I mean, I you know, as far as the best part of the speech went, you know, I thought that it was around the fraud issue, and there's no question that he laid this out in terms of the thousands of people who were dead who voted, you know, of people who were, you know, not in the same residence that they claimed they were in, out of state. And again, we saw all these kinds of things that, that have been articulated, but you haven't seen it, like you said, in a leading official who basically is supporting Trump's argument. Whereas look at McConnell. I mean, he walks away from this as though it's toxic for him to say anything in defense of, you know, of what Trump had to go through and the stolen election. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
No, and that goes back to what him not backing down. And I mean, and I think this is kind of what I said in the intro. In times of stability and relative peace and prosperity, you know, the people tend to want the legislator guy, the guy who goes along, goes up there, can make deals, can bring home the pork. He can bring home that I-10 bridge. He can, you know, he can make deals and he can stand his ground, but it's mostly about negotiating and compromise. That's not where we're at. The Constitutional Republic is under attack. We need leaders. We need warriors, people who are not going to go and go along to get along. They're going to go up there to fight, to defeat the leftist onslaught against our rights. And that's what I got out of him, is that he's going to be a leader and a warrior to go fight for these things and not just roll over because, well, I went ahead and rolled over because I wanted to get the I-10 ring.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree with that. Let me ask you this. We all agree that the speech was really good, okay? There were a couple of points that I really kind of disagreed with. One of them was he kept emphasizing that we had to give the Republicans back the House in 2022. And my thought there was, yes, we can give it back to them, but what are they going to do about it, with it? 2010 comes right to mind, 2014 right on its heels. We gave them back the House and the Senate to stop Obama, and they did nothing with it. So let me just ask you this. Assuming he does win the Senate and assuming they win back the House, do you think that they've learned a significant enough lesson after 2010, or are we going to be, you know, you've got Mitch McConnell. I mean, he sold Trump out, and he's still going to be there. So how do we, and I know we're talking about the House, but the Senate is going to be up too. So how is it that we can put any more faith in these guys after what we've seen in the past? What's your sense of that?
My sense of it is burn it down and start over.
Okay.
I mean, the short answer is no. They didn't learn the lessons, and they're probably not going to do any better unless they're absolutely forced to by the people. And that's kind of where we're at, is the people need to force them to do better. Now, in my mind, Trump made the decision for me. I was waiting, because if he was willing to start a third party, I was in. I was ready to go, man. I was ready to send my money and my
yes.
registration.
Right.
But look, he's made the assessment, the analysis, that, look, we've already got a framework here. It's there, the framework, the organization, what we just need to do, which we've talked about many times, is actually reform the Republican Party, get rid of the rhinos, and make it a fire-breathing conservative party that actually defeats liberals instead of compromises with them. And I understand that, because I think where Trump was looking is, if we build a new party, it might take 10 years to rebuild or to build a new party and
right.
then get to a point where we put a president in, okay? It could take as long as 10 years. We probably don't have 10 years.
Exactly.
So the easier path is to rebuild the Republican Party. And there are good Republicans in there. There are people like that. So I think what we have to do now is we have to get in tune with what President Trump is doing to reform the Republican Party, and do not be afraid to throw some of these weak, wobbly rhinos aside. Get them out. I mean, what we want to see in 2022, if you are rhino or Democrat, you lose. You lose.
Well, let me ask you this along those lines. I mean, it seems to me that, we do have a responsibility, I think, to bring this up with Mo and move him in a direction that he's laying the you know, setting the stage for doing exactly that if he is elected. Because if he's silent on this, then people are just going to, you know, follow along and say, okay, well, you know, we just have to get the House back and keep the Senate and blah, blah, blah. But if he becomes an advocate for exactly what you have talked about there and what I've been talking about, it seems to me that that's the path that we need to push him onto so that he is that leading advocate that's, you know, fighting for the Senate.
But, and he said that. He said that a couple times, no more rhinos. He talked about that, mentioned several times, we got to cleanse out, purge, whatever you want, get the exact word, the rhinos. So I think he's aware of it. And I mean, you know, I hate to be in this position again, but here we are. We, you know, it's like football fans, you know. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, the team, they just won't do what needs to be done to win the championship. You know, they're pretty good. They win a few games, but they just won't do what needs. So here we are again. We're not going to switch schools. We're going to try one more time to rebuild it. Yeah. And, you know, and honestly, I'm following President Trump's lead on this. Because if he's going to put his time and effort into no kidding reforming the Republican Party for two to four more years, I'm in. I mean, I've been doing it for 20 plus years, so I can do it for another
yeah,
two
what's,
or four.
What's two more years?
That's I mean, his really.
All right, so if that's one of his weak spots, at least as my sense of it was, the other part of the talk that I kind of disagreed with was he placed a lot of the burden on the American citizen for being complacent about letting things just kind of ride, and the next thing you know, we've got all of these kinds of problems to deal with. And, you know, my sense of this is that starting with Reagan, you know, and going back before Reagan, I mean, conservatism in this country, you know, had its leaders, like Bill Buckley, Reagan, okay, fine. But in the end, you know, who are the people that have dropped the ball? And that, to me, is the political leadership. Those, again, the easy way to understand it is the rhinos. And the best example of it is during the Obama period, when all they had to do was to stand up to Obama, stop what was going on as best they could, but they were afraid of being called racist, and it checkmated them. And I would suggest to you that the American people at heart, I believe, are, as you've seen with 75 million of them, you know, voting for Trump this last election, are ready to follow a conservative path.
I don't disagree with that. The people out there, I think, agree. A lot of people agree with everything you just said. And I want to take one difference, though, when you said they were just, yeah, they were afraid of the press and racism and the Republicans during the Obama years. But I would also submit a lot of them were actually somewhat sympathetic to the leftist agendas and policies. They're big government globalist types.
Yeah.
So it didn't bother them that much that we were going to do some of these leftist things. They were like, well, that's okay. We'll put a Republican name on it later. So
yeah.
I think that was part of the problem, not just that they had no fortitude, but they had no real conservative conviction either.
Yeah, well, certainly this question about globalism has been laid bare by Trump, and the degree to which, you know, that has become a major conservative issue is part and parcel of, I think, you know, winning this middle class, working class. I guess if you want to talk about it, in transforming the Republican Party from the country club types to the more working class types.
And he's done that. The working people are in there. And I think if when you reach the working people, when you reach just average Americans, whether they're working people, small business owners, whatever, I think they're all on board with this. They think the same way. They want this. The problem is they got to stay engaged long enough.
Yeah.
And you're fighting a couple of things. You've got the media, social media, big tech, all out there with this huge echo chamber that is trying to give you fake news and this alternate reality that there are no conservatives, that the only conservatives in the whole country are a handful of skinheads hiding in the Appalachian Mountains or something.
Yeah.
That's what they want you to believe, when it's actually conservatives are the vast majority of good, hard-working, God-fearing Americans. But I think Mo has a point in that most of those hard-working, God-fearing Americans, they're still on Facebook. They're still on Twitter. I mean, the exact people who
censor them
and oppress them, they will not leave. These are online cyber concentration camps that are basically telling you, we're going to censor what you say, we're going to filter what you can see. You can't see things. We'll oppress you, put you in jail, and we're actually trying to brainwash you and shape what you think. And it's like the gates of Auschwitz are open, but the people will not leave because they go, well, I'm going to wait till the next buffet, and then after that, whatever. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think you're right about that.
That's the big problem. All these Americans who get really mad, and they get real, they watch the news, and they holler at the TV, and they holler at the radio, and they curse McConnell, and they curse AOC, but they go right back to Facebook and Twitter to be brainwashed some more. So, in my mind, I think Brooks has a point there. A lot of Americans don't get it yet. They're still in the concentration camp complaining instead of doing something about it.
I don't disagree with that. I do think, though, the responsibility of finding the alternatives is something that is not – it's something that Trump says he's going to do. I think the sooner the better. I've seen the time frame that it may be 3 or 4 months. He needs it next week, you know. So that's a factor. I think, like, you take –
I don't disagree. It's these other alternate social media are very, very difficult. I mean, I've left Facebook. I'm on MeWe. I left Twitter. I'm on Parler. But I'm barely on Parler because Parler, since it came back, doesn't really function right.
Yeah.
MeWe, honestly, is not as good as Facebook as far as how it works, but it's getting better, and there's people there.
Right.
And there's mostly patriots there. But, you know, until we start leaving in droves, you know, we get off the social media. Stop reading the New York Times and the Washington Post. Stop watching Good Morning America and ABC News and all these stupid things.
Right.
They're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep brainwashing us. And that's where the American people need to step up and make their voices heard. They don't even need to protest.
Well, Pete, you're one of the leading advocates of all these things, and we really appreciate you coming on this morning. I'm getting the wrap-it-up sign from Lori. Well, no, I'm glad to have you, Pete. So take care. And listen, we'll probably see you on May 1st when we have our Tax Day rally out at Fowl River. That's where we're going. So looking forward to seeing you then, if not before.
Yeah, no, great. We'll look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right, Pete.
Have a great day.
Hang in there, guy. Take care. All righty. All right, folks, another fast. I mean, here it is. And, boy, we got 5 minutes extra. Look out. We're doing good. Oh, that means I'm going to have to put a bigger check in there for Lori. All right, friends and neighbors. Next time around, I think is after Easter. So the Monday after Easter is the 5th. We'll be back, and I'll have some information on talking to Mr. Cooper, and we'll see what other damage the Biden people have done in a week. I'm sure it'll be substantial. So without any further ado, I certainly wish everyone a happy Easter. Take care. God bless. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, a paid-for program by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98 and in Malbus on 181. If you missed a part of the program or you want to tell a friend, you can listen later at WABF1480.com. WABF now resuming regular programming.